have anybody to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
Fishing the waters of the wild and wonderful, the bluegrass and beyond. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker. Brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. Let Borders help you get outdoors. Now, here's your host, Cam Connors.
Good Saturday morning, and thanks for catching another episode with Hook, Line, and Sinker. I am your host, Cam Connors. It has been an exciting week for me. I finally got my truck back. Got to do a lot more fishing this past week than I have been throughout most of spring. I got to talk a little more about that later on in the show. Also, Sunday, last weekend, we took a day trip up to Thomas, West Virginia. Went to the second annual Appalachian Fly Fishing Festival. A huge shout out for Tyler Waldo and all the folks who put that event on. We had a great time up there. It was a really fun event. My son, who I've been having some trouble getting him into fishing. He really just is not very patient. You know, he plays a lot of video games and he's used to that kind of thing. So fishing isn't something that really has piqued his interest up until now. But he did some fly casting up there in the practice pond, and he seems to be interested. He seems to, I don't know, that spark is there. So it might be something that I try to foster into him. So that's pretty cool. We also met some great folks there for potential future interviews at the Fly Fishing Festival. In fact, one of them will be on the show today. It was actually really funny. We bumped into a fly fishing guide there at the festival who's actually located right here in the tri-state. I'll be talking with Jason of Home Waters Kentucky Fly Tying and Guiding in the show today. Also coming up, I'll be talking with David Wellman with the West Virginia DNR about the West Virginia Master Angler Program. And then to round out the show today, I'll talk with Mike Davis, who is with the West Virginia sector of Project Healing Waters. Now, they are a national movement with several outreaches in states, and they're helping veterans and current servicemen and women heal through the art of fishing. So a very interesting talk with him on the way. Plus, I got a couple of fishing stories to share along the way with you as well. But before we cast into all that, let's take a look at our weekend's weather and water conditions from around the region. We'll start off with those water conditions. Looking at the Coal River here in St. Albans, I actually had the chance to go out on the Coal and fish during my lunch break about 3 or 4 days this past week. So it has been on the uptick temperature-wise all week, hitting 71 degrees yesterday. Moving east to the Elk, where it runs into the canal, getting warmer as well, warmer than the Coal, in fact, as it's nearly touching 72 degrees. And over to the west in Kentucky, my stomping grounds on the Little Sandy River, still on the cooler side, though it is warming up as well. It looks like they have slowed the flow rate coming from the Grayson Dam, probably on about Wednesday of this past week, as the temperature shot up from 64 to 68 or 69 in just a couple of hours' time. So it looks like it's floating around that 67, 68 degree mark now. And take a look at the mighty Ohio. It saw a dip through the midweek down to about 61, but it's bouncing back with the hotter daytime temps we've been seeing, nearing 66 degrees as we head into the weekend. As for the weather this weekend, today overcast skies for much of the day, rain shower possible here and there. High today of about 81 with some pretty light winds. Looking like to be a decent fishing day, in my opinion. Tonight, scattered thunderstorms a possibility throughout the evening with a low of 67. Tomorrow, showers early on, turning into isolated thunderstorms throughout the afternoon, a high of 80, and expected to be a little windier than today. Take a look around the region, events, tournaments, and things of note going on through the weekend. In fact, going on right now, a great event for the kids. If you're in the Kanawha County, Putnam County area, Beyond the Backyard, hosting an outdoor adventure camp. It's happening right now at Cabela's parking lot in South Charleston. It's definitely something you want to check out for the kiddos to get them out and get them interested into the outdoors. I actually did an interview a couple episodes ago with Bobby Warner talking about this event. It's a really great opportunity to get the kids out and get them interested in fishing and hiking and camping and archery. And so definitely, if you've got a chance, go check that out. Also going on this weekend, a free fishing weekend, both West Virginia and Kentucky. This is actually for all anglers. In-state, out-of-state, doesn't matter. No license required today and tomorrow, the 7th and the 8th. We're about to take a quick break before our first interview of the day. But first, don't forget, you know, subscribe on YouTube. Subscribe to the show. If you're listening via the show podcast, YouTube, Pandora, Amazon Music, Spotify, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode and you can help the show grow. And of course, now you can also interact with the show as well. You can be a part of it. WJYPAM.com. Head over to the Hook, Line, and Sinker page and you can share your fishing stories, your pictures of your catch. You can ask questions or just drop a line and say hi. There's a form that you fill out. It's right down. You scroll past the podcast player on the Hook, Line, and Sinker page. You see that contact form. You fill it out. You can upload your catch picture there as well. And we may even give you a shout out on the show. You can also check out my adventures beyond the show there as well. My blog posts. Check out my latest fishing stories, pictures of my catches and adventures, and things going on there on the show page as well. When we come back, we're going to kick off today's show with the West Virginia DNR's Master Angler Program. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock, brought to you by Border Sporting Goods on U.S. Route 60 in Ashland. Border Sporting Goods, family-owned and operated for over 40 years, has the Tri-State's largest fishing selection, as well as a great archery department, with bows, arrows, and more. From the kids that shoot for their school teams to what mom and dad will need for their next hunting adventure, Borders carries major brands like Hoyt, Matthews, Ten Point, and Raven. Come shoot your next bow at Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at bordersportinggoods.com.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Fish on. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
Today's show brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. You can find them on U.S. 60 in Ashland, Kentucky. They're your one-stop shop for all of your hunting and fishing needs. Let Borders help you get outdoors and find them online, BordersSportingGoods.com. So back in Episode 5, I talked with Kentucky Fishing Game about their Master Angler and Trophy Fish program. And most states these days have a Master Angler or a Trophy Fish program of some sorts. West Virginia, of course, has one, the Master Angler program. In fact, last week I talked with Carson Schock, who was the youngest person in West Virginia to earn the title of Master Angler. And he gave me some details of the program and kind of details on what it takes to accomplish, get the title. But today I'm talking with David Wellman with the West Virginia DNR to learn more about it. David, thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome, Cam. Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get right into it. Talk to me about the Master Angler program. You know, what exactly is it for folks who may not be aware of it?
Sure, yeah. This is a program that we began back in 2022, so it's been around just for a few years. It's really just one of the ways that we have to promote fishing and recognize anglers for some of the accomplishments that they have over the years. To be able to become a master angler, you need to have quite a bit of dedication. It takes quite a bit of energy, because our master angler program is made up of what we call different fishing slams, and those slams are essentially organized by different fish species, such as a black bass, catfish, panfish, and a few others. We have a total of six slams. And to be able to qualify for each one of the slams, you need to catch each one of the species within that slam. It's got to meet the minimum length, and all has to be done within one calendar year. And you can qualify for, again, what we consider to be a fish slam. Now, if you qualify for all six slams, that allows you to be considered a master angler within our program.
And the slams, you said there's six of them. And, of course, each one's going to be one, we'll say, species or one subspecies of fish. And you have 1 year, I believe it is, to complete that slam. They all have to be done within, per slam, that calendar year. But as far as the Master Angler Program, do you have to have all the slams within 1 year, or can that be over a lifetime?
No, that's over a lifetime, and it's just a one-time award, the Master Angler, just a one-time award. So you can take the time, you know, if you want to do it over 6 years, what have you, for the Master Angler, you're more welcome to do that. Like I said, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of dedication, and also quite a bit of know-how to be able to accomplish this feat. It's pretty impressive when folks do it. I'm always kind of amazed talking with folks that get out and actually do this, because, like I said, it does take a level of dedication that a lot of fishermen, you know, oftentimes just don't have the time to commit for it.
Right.
So So
what's the verification process? You know, how do they check these fish in to get them added towards their slam and added towards the Master Angler title?
Okay, well, what they need to do is when they catch these different species, as I mentioned, there's a minimum length limit. For instance, if you're looking at a black bass slam, you need to catch the largemouth, smallmouth, and spotted bass. They all have a minimum length limit of 12 inches, right? And so what we need when you apply for one of these slams, you need to provide an application that you can get off our website, or if someone calls us, we can always email that to them as well, too, or mail it through the mail. And then when they complete their application, they need to also be able to provide us a picture of them with the fish so that we can actually identify the fish and make sure that it's correct. These photographs, they have to be time-stamped as well, too, showing the date and the time that they caught those fish. And that's really about all there is to it.
So as far as, like, the measurement of the fish, we just take the angler's word on it. You don't need it to be, like, in a measuring tray or a ruler held up to it, anything like that.
Well, it helps if you do have a measuring tape laying there, or if you do have some type of tray that you put them in. And oftentimes that's what we get. I do not believe that it's actually required for that. You know, you can look at some fish and you can tell, yeah, that's going to make it. But it certainly does help. And a lot of folks that are trying to achieve this feat, they do take tape measures with them, and quite honestly, it does help us if the measurements are recorded in a photograph.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a requirement, but it is immensely helpful if folks will do that and will help towards the verification of their catch.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Also, just real quick, this is for public waters only. Private don't qualify for this.
Gotcha. And so we are talking about length. Weight doesn't play a factor in the Master Angler Program?
That's correct, because what we would end up having to have is, if weight were a factor in it, they would have to be on a certified scale. There's a couple issues with that. One, it's become increasingly difficult to find a nearby store or tackle shop or whatever that actually has certified scales. And then oftentimes, you know, folks want to practice catch and release. And if you need to take those fish away from the river or lake that they're caught, by the time you get them somewhere to be weighed and get them back to the river, they're going to die on them.
Right.
So we just require the length.
So I know in the state of Kentucky, whenever you, they don't have slams per se, but they do have different, they have a list of fish and a minimum size on, you know, minimum length on each fish. And whenever you accomplish one in the state of Kentucky, they'll give you like a little patch, a little sticker, a little certificate. Does the West Virginia do anything like that per slam?
We do, yeah. We have a couple different things. Again, we have the Fish Slam program that rolls right into the Master Angler program. And when you achieve any of those, we send you a certificate at the end of the year. For whichever species that you may have qualified for, or for a Master Angler, we'll be able to send you a nice certificate for that. We also have what we call our Trophy Fish Citation Program, which is somewhat similar, but different than what our Master Angler program is. And it's been around for decades. And sort of the same thing, except just for individual fish. for instance, you know, whether it's brook, brown, rainbow trout, largemouth, smallmouth, whatever, we have minimum lengths for that as well, too. And if you happen to catch a fish that equals those minimum lengths or greater than the minimum lengths, fill an application, you can qualify for a trophy fish citation as well. And that's the same thing. You'll receive a certificate at the end of the year. They're really nice certificates. The fish that are portrayed on those certificates are by an artist, Tom Morelli, and they're really nice artwork. So that's what we send out to the folks that qualify for the Trophy Fish Citation Program.
And so for the Trophy Fish and the Master Angler, are you awarding, you said the end of the year, mm-hmm. Do you only award these once per year at the end of the year, or is it something that's reviewed every month that they then issue the award?
Well, the Master Angler Program, we will review a little bit more often. Excuse me. If someone qualifies for a slam, we'll try to get those out whenever they apply. Now, the Trophy Fish Citation Program is a little bit different, because the way the citation programs work is an angler will receive one certificate at the end of the year with all of the fish that they had collected, because oftentimes you'll have anglers that will receive, you know, multiple, sometimes dozens of citation fish each year. And so instead of sending out multiple certificates throughout the year, we just wait till the end of the year and we include all the citations on one certificate. We send those out December or January of the following year.
And so let's say I catch a bass, say I catch mm-hmm. a largemouth, and it meets the requirements of both the trophy fish citation and my slam for black bass. Can that one fish go towards both, or will I need to catch separate fish in order to get those?
No, that's a great question, but it can go towards both.
Oh, that's awesome. Certainly.
Yeah, for instance, so if you catch a largemouth bass that is, say, 21 inches, which is the minimum length for a trophy fish citation, you can certainly apply that to your bass slam. But in the bass slam, the largemouth bass minimum length is only 12 inches.
Gotcha. So it makes it a little more attainable as far as minimum size requirement on the slams versus the trophy fish citations.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
So another question I had, see, I live in the state of Kentucky, but I fish, I have my West Virginia out of resident license. I fish West Virginia regularly. Can I submit for the trophy fish citation or the Master Angler Program being an out-of-state resident?
Absolutely, yes, sir. As long as you're a licensed angler, you can qualify for those. You bet. We'll be happy to send someone a Master Angler certificate that lives in Kentucky or any other surrounding state. You bet.
Awesome. Well, David, I appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Is there anything else that we haven't covered on yet that you would like folks to know about?
No, sir. I think we covered both of those programs pretty well. I would encourage folks, if they do have more questions, feel free to give any of our officers a call, ask to talk to one of the fisheries biologists. They'll be able to explain any of these programs as well as where to fish and give some advice out there. So feel free to give us a call at any time.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, I've been doing this show for a little bit now, and I've reached out to the West Virginia DNR several times. I've had several folks on for interviews. You guys are always just the most helpful, most informative folks. You guys have it down, and I really appreciate everything you guys do.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you very much. That's very much appreciated.
Well, man, again, thank you so much for taking the time today, and maybe we'll get to talk again soon.
I hope so.
Coming up after the break, some tackle talk. A picture popped up in my Facebook feed this week, and it reminded me of a time that I snapped my rod, and I've got the story. Plus, we'll be talking with Jason Stacy of Home Waters Kentucky, fly tying and guiding. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock. Border Sporting Goods is your one-stop outdoor sporting goods store. Family-owned and operated for over 40 years, Borders is the Tri-State's number one outlet for Liberty Safes. Proudly made in the USA with a lifetime warranty, a Liberty Safe will protect what's most important to you from theft or fire. Online at BordersSportingGoods.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram at Borders Sporting Goods. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 US Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky.
When I grow up, I want to be a doctor.
I want to be a veterinarian.
When I grow up, I want to be a fireman.
I want to be a scientist so I can connect like other things and build other things.
I want to be an astronaut so I can float up space.
When I grow up, I want to be a dancer.
I want to be a superhero, but if that doesn't work out, I will be an engineer.
When I grow up, I want to be a chef because I like ice cream.
I want to be a basketball player.
I want to be a jet pilot so I can take people to really fun places.
I want to be a drug addict.
Get to your kids before drugs do. Arm yourself with the facts. Get your free The Truth About Drugs booklet set today. Go to drugfreeworld.org.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Fishtails, we've got them. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
To kick off today's Tackle Talk segment, I want to dive into a story about time I snapped my rod. A picture popped up in my Facebook memories feed earlier this week. It's from about 13 years ago, and you can see it now. I've got it on the show page, WJYPAM.com. Just go to the Hook, Line, and Sinker tab there on the drop-down menu. It's a snapped rod, and it's laying across my lap that I had, I kind of jerry-rigged it back together. So at the time, I was probably about 21 years old, and I drove around this old, beat-up Ford Ranger, and I loved that truck. Being a young redneck boy from Kentucky that I was, I kept a fishing pole with me in the bed of that truck just about everywhere I went. It stayed there in the bed of the truck. Well, this one particular day, I decided to stop by Greenbow Lake after work to do a little fishing for a while, and I had just gotten set up. I rigged up the line, was ready to fish, got comfortable, and I first cast, I throw it out and just snap. Sure enough, broke clean right below the first eyelet, or the last one if you're counting down from the tip, but the first one up from the reel. Just snapped the rod clean into. And I was raised to solve problems. I don't, didn't really want to pack up and go home. I'd really just gotten there. So I did the only thing that I could really think to do at the time, and that was I fixed it. And yes, I use air quotes when I say fixed. I took the tip end, tucked it down into the hollow of the reel end of the brake, and then I found a couple of sticks that were semi-straight and used them as splints and tightly wrapped it all together with some monofilament out of my tackle box. And amazingly enough, it worked. I remember I actually fished the rest of the evening using that. And according to my Facebook memories post, I even caught a few bluegill on it. So again, if you want to see that impromptu repair job from long ago, you can check it out now on the show page, WJYPAM.com. Well, if you've listened to the show for any amount of time now, you know that I love to feature local folks in my Tackle Talk segment. Folks who are making lures or making gear, they're guiding locally. And this past weekend, we went up to the Appalachian Fly Fishing Festival, and we ran into a fella and his wife there who are actually, he's a fly fishing guide and a fly tier from right here in the tri-state. It's crazy because we went so far away to meet somebody who's right here at home. But joining me now, Jason, who runs Home Waters Kentucky Fly Tying and Guiding. How you doing today, man?
Doing good. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I still think it's crazy how we went so far away to bump into each other.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, because I set up here and do things around here, I never thought I'd run into somebody from back here.
Right, so far away. Yeah, we were walking through the festival, and you guys were set up, and my wife had on a Summer Motion t-shirt from Ashland Summer Motion, and you all recognized it, and we connected that way. So thanks for yelling out to us, and thanks again for taking the time to talk today. Tell me a little about yourself, man. How did you get into fly fishing?
Well, name's Jason Stacy. I grew up here in the tri-state as a kid. My family was always into fishing. My grandparents had two boats on Cave Run Lake. So all through my childhood was spent weekends out there crappie and bass fishing. And as I got older in high school, looking at other forms to be just a little bit different and challenge myself to different types of fishing, I picked up a fly rod for the first time and was actually the only person in my family doing it. And this was back in the early 90s, so unfortunately there wasn't YouTube and things like that to get on there to learn, so it was a lot of learning on my own. Over the years, I just kind of proceeded on down the line, just first fly fishing, then learning to tie my own flies more out of necessity, not having having anybody around here actually sold flies. None of the places really sell them. No fly shops in the area. None of the tackle stores sell them. So.
Right. They're a little more available now than they used to be, for sure.
Yeah. Like in the 90s, you might walk into some place and be able to find a few cork poppers for bluegill, but that was about it. So now, you know, you get a little bit more places. It's just, you know, it's coming a little more mainstream. More people are seeing it, but still not the easiest thing to find at times when you're looking for specific things for certain stuff. So
right, but there are a few places that you can find stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, if you know, push comes to shove, there is always, you know, ordering from online.
Yeah, you so, know, like I said, you didn't. Because in midnight, you know, early 90s, you could get on there. You could get, but you know, it's still, you couldn't see it very well. You were looking at catalogs, and you know, you didn't have the internet to look things up at, and sometimes you put an order in, it might take 2 weeks to get something back then.
Right.
Good didn't have good. Amazon 2-day shipping. So.
Right. The 2 weeks might have even been a quick one back then.
Yeah.
So how did, you know, you said that you were the first one in your family, you've been around fishing your whole life, and you wanted to challenge yourself. Yeah. And so how did the picking up the fly fishing and the tying your own out of necessity, how did that morph into the business side that you guys have kind of got going today?
Well, so I've off and on fly fish for the past, now it's going on over 35 years, but really got into it about just specifically the fly rod for myself about going on about 12 years ago now. And so I was tying and stuff for myself, and I actually worked full-time as a respiratory therapist. So about 5 years ago when COVID hit, I was sitting around just doing a lot of time because there just wasn't nearly anything else to go do. Everything was shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So started posting online, had people call me up like, hey, you know, I really wanted to try this. You know, hey, these look great. How do I order? So just I started off first just selling the flies, doing some private lessons to help people just kind of learn because people were wanting to learn it. You know, like I said, 5 years ago, the only thing you could go do was be outdoors because so many things were shut down.
Right. And I've actually seen that as a trend with a lot of people I've talked to in the fly fishing community, that COVID struck and it was almost like a little bit of a gold mine for fly fishing because it was a chance for people to get out and experience. It was a new experience that they could do socially distanced.
Yes. Well, and I noticed it a lot talking to friends that I had around the country that I'd made through fly fishing online and stuff. A lot of them noticed an uptake in the number of people wanting to be outdoors, but there were a lot of people who were coming from families that had never done, you know, didn't do this. They, you know, they didn't, their families weren't into camping. They weren't into hiking, things like that. Well, when social distancing came along, everybody's like, there's stuff to do other than go hang out at the mall. So I saw a lot of people, you know, it became a lot more people going camping, a lot more people going hiking, and they were seeing these things, and there was more being presented for outdoor activities. So fly fishing was definitely one of those that increased the number of people seeing it.
Absolutely, and it seems to have helped you out a little as well. You were able to get started into, you know, the selling the flies, and now you're doing guiding.
Yeah. So yeah, about the, I noticed that in the area we have plenty of, you know, once you get past really Cave Run Lake, coming back east, there's not a lot of guiding till you get up into the mountains of West Virginia. And I was already working on doing a lot of the promoting of just fly fishing, giving lessons in both the fly fishing and the fly tying. I did some youth classes through Dragonfly Outdoors, the out in Greenup. And I was like, it just kind of seemed like the most logical next step was to open up a part-time guiding business at least, just so I was able to get people more immersed, because I can do an hour lesson, but, you know, which is great to teach somebody how to cast, teach them the basic knots and picking the correct fly. But when you can actually get them out there on the water and give them that on the water experience with it, it really does increase that enjoyment of it. Oh, it's great to be able to hit a target out in the yard, but when you're able to make a cast and have a fish tugging on the other end, you're going to get a lot better, a lot more excitement that way.
Oh, absolutely. And everybody I've talked to about fly fishing, I'm relatively new into it. I just got into it here in the past 6 or 8 months myself. So everybody that I've talked to, when asking them, you know, any advice for beginners, and every single one of them will tell you, get on the water. That's the best thing you can do is get on the water. I mean, it's one thing to practice casting in your yard, but you get on the water and you get a feel for it, and just repetition.
Yes. And I tell everybody, you know, when they're asking me, but I was like, you know, everybody's like, it, you know, the big thing is everybody's like, it's such a difficult looking thing to learn to cast. And I was like, there's not a person in this world that I can't take 15 minutes and I can have you making a 20-foot cast with ease, and you won't even notice it after a few minutes. You practice for 15 minutes a day, and within 2 weeks, you can be hitting targets at 20 feet, 30 feet.
Yeah, it's not as difficult as people make it seem. I mean, I've picked it up, and really, I just start out with watching YouTube videos. The important thing is technique. You know, keep your arm in the right position, and timing.
Yes. Yeah, it's all about just that correct, you know, that correct motion, that correct, and it's not a real, and it's not having to be a real powerful motion. It's just, it's a straight line. If you're able to keep that rod tip straight, you're going to make a perfect cast every time, as long as you're releasing at that moment. And it just takes that little bit of repetition to get that timing down.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get yourself on the water, you know, you're not in a big open field a lot of times, and you're having to hit those smaller things. You get that much more excitement out of learning that cast properly. If you've got it down correctly, when you get on the water, you may have overhanging trees, and you've got to, instead of casting straight up and down, you may have to go a little sideways. But if you got that basic idea, you can hit these targets. Well, all of a sudden, when you're seeing that and then you're catching the fish with it, you're getting that reward, it's a lot better, you know, it's a lot more fulfilling than just hitting. Say you lay a paper plate out there and you start landing your fly on the paper plate.
Right. You start getting that gratification, that reward of why we're doing this in the first place. So you're doing guiding now. Where do you guide at? You said, you know, you're in the Ashland area.
Yeah. I live in the Ashland area. I keep it to within about roughly an hour and a half away from Ashland, just because that makes it a little bit easier for meeting up with people. Plus, we have so much great fishing within that distance here.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're just, you know, and I'm not even talking about the lakes that we have in the area, just the wading fishing that we have with our smaller creeks and rivers, especially with my main two targets being smallmouth and muskie. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you can't find those around here. I can think of at least 5 creeks within 45 minutes that I can put you on the water and have you catching 2-pound bass on a fly rod. You know, it's places like Tiger Creek, out in Carter County, out near Carter Caves.
Yeah.
The spillways between even, Yatesville and Grayson, the Little Sandy River is a tremendous, tremendous smallmouth fishery when you get up into the, up closer to Grayson Lake.
Yeah.
And muskie are abound in every one of these creeks, especially in the Little Sandy and Big Sandy waterways both.
Really? I wasn't aware there were muskie in the Little Sandy. I live practically on the Little Sandy River.
Oh, I know guys who literally don't fish anywhere else because basically the stretch from right at the confluence where the Little Sandy rolls into the Ohio,
yeah,
all the way back up to you get to Grayson Lake, you will find muskie that entire way through there.
Huh.
Now, they, are, of course, are a challenging fish, you know.
Right.
With the 1,000 cast, it's going to take you a while sometimes to find one, and then to hook one on the fly rod, you know, is a whole different story.
Yeah.
Because they are big, they're powerful, and they will run with you. But you can find them all up and down through that river. So
I'm going to have to...
I know guys who travel down here.
I'm going to have to get with you, and we're going to have to go do some fly fishing on the Little Sandy here. In the
Sounds next. Good. Sounds good.
Because seriously, I've never fly fished on the Little Sandy. I would like to, and it's so close to home that I think that would be a lot of fun. So, yeah, we're going to have to set that up. But getting back into it, what, you know, talking about your guiding service, what do you typically charge?
Especially the walk and wade trips, they are $150 for a 4-hour trip. If we bump that up to a whole day, we're looking at $200. That's for smallmouth. I even during the summer, because it does get warm, another fish that a lot of people started wanting to chase on the fly rod is carp, which is a very interesting fish to be trying to catch on a fly rod.
Yeah,
everybody looks at me like I'm crazy, but
they can be a little finicky, even just on a traditional setup sometimes. So, yeah, like a grass carp, I could see that being a fun one, because, you know, they've got some power on them.
They've got some power, and they're very picky eaters.
Yes.
Everybody thinks, oh, they're carp, they're going across the bottom, they're just eating trash. The problem is a carp, because of the shape of their mouth, has to be really picky about what they eat. They can't take in big bites of things.
Right.
Plus, they don't have teeth to grip on and rip something apart, you know. And a lot of people, actually, if they ever look into, you know, one of the big fish that everybody wants to go chase in the saltwater is a bonefish. Carp will act a lot like a bonefish. So I know guys that will literally spend time chasing carp to prepare for bonefish.
Huh.
Because of how picky of an eater they are, and you've got to be very precise. They're very line shy. For a fish that can get so big, everything scares them.
Yeah.
I mean, you bump a tree, and they'll run clear back up the creek on you. You know.
So because they're such a picky eater, what kind of fly is going to be? I mean, obviously you're going to want something small because of the shape of their mouth. Are we talking like a small nymph or?
Yeah, well, what we're looking at is nymphs in that, you know, maybe a 1-inch range. They're really big into, like, dragonfly nymphs.
Uh-huh.
They absolutely love crayfish. So, you know, a 1 to 2-inch length crayfish fly.
Okay.
They love those. They love those. You have to lead them a little bit, use long leaders. You know, I may only be fishing like a 15-foot wide river, and my leader may be that same length.
Okay.
Because they are, you know, you're using long leaders because they are so line shy. They, you know, the slightest thing above them hits the water and they'll run. Another strange thing about carp is certain times of the year, if you're in places where some berries fall in the water, they'll come and pick those off the top of the water.
Huh. Interesting.
I have seen carp with that downturned mouth come up and sip berries off the top of the water.
Huh. That'd be something to look
for.
And
then, of course, yeah. So it's a very interesting thing to see a full carp come up. It's almost like going down to these places like at Myrtle Beach where they stock the fish in these big open ponds that they put around to keep things cleaned up around like the shopping centers down there, and they'll have the fish feeding things.
Yeah.
And you can throw in there and the fish go crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, most of those are some type of carp. Well, you'll see these carp and they'll get in groups and these berries will be dropping and you'll see them coming up and just eating them and fighting over them.
Okay.
So.
Well, we got sidetracked with carp just a little bit, but going back to your rates, I wanted to say, you said 150 for 4 hours, and how much for a full day?
A full day, 8 hours, is 200.
Which is extremely reasonable. I mean, with every guy, I mean, seriously, that is, to be one of the only people guiding in our area, that's great rates. because I've talked to guys up in Morgantown, out towards Thomas. I've talked to people down around Bluefield and down southern West Virginia, mm-hmm. and they're charging, you know, $400-$600 for half days. So
yeah.
that's an extremely reasonable rate for fly guide, especially here in our region.
Well, and like I tell a lot of people, you know, for me, this isn't, you know, yes, I want to make some money. I want to make sure that I can, you know, keep my equipment up, things like that. But my major thing for doing all of this, when I started promoting and doing all these things, it was to show people in this area that fly fishing can be very successful, and we have a great area to do it in because we're not a talked about area. You know, I mean, I see it all the time where people will see me, like I'll be set up down at the market on the square down in Ashland sometimes, and people come in like, I didn't even know you could fly fish around here. And a lot of that comes from, you know, the way that fly fishing is promoted so much on TV, and what people have in their mind is you've got to have these big wide open trout streams,
yeah.
and they're thinking Montana. And, you know, of course people know, well, I can go up to West Virginia and fly fish. I can go down to the Smoky Mountains and fly fish. I can take you 10 minutes from your house and I can have you fly fishing.
Oh yeah.
And well, as much fun as a trout is on a fly rod, a 2-pound smallmouth will give you so much excitement.
Well, and that's one of the things I talk about all the time here on the show. Of course, you know, I talk about all kinds of fishing. We talk about catfishing. We talk about just traditional, you know, bass fishing. But whenever I do talk about fly fishing, it's one of the things I like to mention is, you know, the big stereotype is that it's all about trout, you know, that it's only a trout and salmon, and, you know, you got to be up north where it's cold and in the mountains. And no, you can catch anything. You can catch bluegill on a fly
set. Yeah. Oh, and the thing is, you know, and a fly rod, just like any other type of rod, comes in all the different sizes. You can get a small fly rod that you catch a 10-inch bluegill on will give you a fight better than anything you've ever found.
Well, and I've heard it said that pound for pound, bluegill do fight as much as any other fish, if not more.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If bluegill could get to get big as a muskie, we'd never see a muskie again because the bluegill would eat them all.
So. Right. Everybody would be fishing for the bluegill.
Yes.
So. Well, Jason, man, I appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Real quick before we wrap it up, if folks want to get in touch with you, set up an appointment to go fishing, you know, your guide service or learn about your flies that you're tying and buy some, what's going to be the best way to get a hold of you?
In all honesty, with the way things are, the easiest way to get a hold of me is to find me on Facebook under Home Waters Kentucky Fly Tying and Guide Service, or you can even just shoot me an email at jasonstacy34@gmail.com. I'm always able to answer either one of those, no matter what I'm out doing, because it's not always easy to grab the phone when you're sitting there in the middle of the creek. So.
Exactly. Well, man, I appreciate you taking the time.
All right, thank you so much.
Still to come on today's show, Project Healing Waters. I'm going to chat with Mike Davis from Project Healing Waters to talk about their mission of helping service men and women and veterans heal and grow through the art of fishing. It's all next with Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock. Border Sporting Goods, family-owned and operated for over 40 years, is the one-stop shop for all your fishing needs. Borders has the largest selection in the tri-state from all the major brands, like Shimano, G. Loomis, Abu Garcia, Blue Rock Custom Tackle, Rapala, NetBait, Strike King, and more. Let the experts at Borders help you find the perfect fishing gear for your next adventure. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at bordersportinggoods.com.
From the local 2U studio, connecting West Virginia, this is the Valley Sports Station, 105.5 and 98.3 FM, 1300 and 1340 AM, The Jock. Reels are streaming, lines are tight. We're back for Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Sinker. I'm your host, Cam Connors. And before we get to our final guest of the day, I wanted to mention, you know, I sadly hadn't got to do as much fishing over the last couple of months as I really would have liked. Back earlier in the year, back in February, in fact, the day they stocked trout at Greenbow Lake, I know because I took the day off specifically for that. So that day, the transmission went out in my wife's car. And so since then, I've been carpooling with coworkers, and she's been driving my truck so that she can make it to work. And because of that, I haven't been able to go fishing as near as much as I would have liked. But last week, we bit the bullet. We bought her a new car, and thankfully, I've got my truck back. So this week, I've gotten to go out and do a lot more fishing since I have really since the beginning of the year, and it's been amazing. I've been going out to the Cold River on my lunch break, caught some bluegill and a little smallmouth bass the other day, but I also have kind of made a bit of a challenge to myself. I want to start checking out some of these lakes from around the region that I've never been to, because there's a few. I mean, I've been to Ride an Hour a good handful of times, but I've never been to the Taze Valley Lakes. I've been to the Hurricane Reservoir once, but that's it. I had never been to Anderson Lake, and I actually went there this week. I went twice. I went on Monday and Wednesday after work. And if you don't know, Anderson Lake is over in Wine Cellar Park, just off the beaten path there in Dunbar. It's a 7-acre lake. It's maintained by the city of Dunbar, I believe. And you're not allowed to take the catfish out of it. So that's there's a big sign posted up when you get there. Do not take the blue cat or the channel cat. You will be fine. So, I went there twice. Like I said, I went there on Monday. Didn't have much luck. And I went there again on Wednesday. And both days I caught some bluegill. Went there targeting bass. I've been told by a few different people that there are some good sized bass in that area. And just didn't get a chance to see any. I mean, I bet I threw every lure in my tackle box. I threw jigs with trailers. I threw topwater spinners. I threw poppers, jitterbugs. I threw crankbaits. I threw shallow wraps. And just nothing, not a single bite on any of it. Monday evening, I caught some bluegill using just some redworms I'd found under a log. Wednesday evening, Wednesday was actually really, really cool, really great as far as the fishing experience, because I got there and I was the only one there. Don't get me wrong, I have nothing against being at the lake with other people fishing. There's no problem with that whatsoever. But to me, it's an advantage if I can get there and there's no one else there, because the fish haven't had a chance to be spooked yet. So I got there, there was nobody else there, and I thought, that is fantastic. I'd been there for maybe an hour when another fellow and his son had showed up. And at that point, I was starting to get pretty pooped. I had tossed, like I said, every lure in my tackle box and then some, and had resolved myself to trying to hunt for redworms and just kind of casting out. I hadn't stopped and bought any night crawlers or anything. And Wednesday, of course, was such a warm day out that couldn't really find any worms. So that it was really a saving grace that these fellas showed up, because I yelled over and asked if they had any night crawlers. Sure enough, they did, and they let me have a couple of them. And using those night crawlers, I started catching bluegill and caught a few good bluegill, yellow-belly sunfish. And I could see over to the side. I could see something chasing some bait fish around this structure in the water. And, I mean, it was stirring up the top good. And I thought, you know, perhaps there's a bass chasing some bait fish in there. And so I cast over there thinking, you know, well, if nothing else, you know, maybe the bass will take the worm. If nothing else, maybe I'll catch one of those bluegill it's chasing. Something took the bobber down, and I set the hook quick. I yanked it instantly. Didn't give it a chance to bob back up. Well, I knew real quick that this was not a panfish and it was not a bass instantly. This thing fought pretty good. It wasn't, don't get me wrong, it wasn't about to pull me in the lake or nothing like that, but it was definitely putting up a good fight, and I got just a cheapo little Zebco spin, open face, 6-foot rod, and it was putting a little bit of a test on this rod and reel. I got 20-pound test braid on it, so I wasn't worried about it snapping the line, but it was definitely bending the pole a good bit. Finally get it to the shore, pull it out, and sure enough, it's a blue cat, probably between 20 and 25 inches long, probably 3 to 5 pounds. I didn't have a scale or tape with me to measure it. But good little catch. If you want to see pictures of it, I've got it posted up on the Hook, Line, and Sinker page right now, WJYPAM.com. You can go check it out there. Don't forget, while you're there, you could also send me a message. You could drop me a line. You could share your catch with me. I got the link there for you to share your catch. You could ask questions and interact with the show. It's right there below the podcast player at WJYPAM on the Hook, Line, and Sinker page. Moving on with the rest of today's show. Well, the show is pretty new. I think we're working on about episode 11 today. And so in the short amount of time since we've started, I have talked with some amazing people who are working with some amazing programs right here in West Virginia. And as we round out the show today, I've been looking forward to this one for a while now because they have a truly amazing mission that's nationwide, but they're also here at West Virginia as well. So joining me now, Mike Davis, the West Virginia Regional Coordinator with Project Healing Waters. Mike, I know we've had some scheduling issues, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Trust me.
So let's jump right in. What is Project Healing Waters for the folks who may not know? What's the mission?
Well, Project Healing Waters, we heal veterans through the therapeutic art of fly fishing. We began in 2005, so this is our 20th year, and we began serving wounded military service members up at Walter Reed Hospital. We're nationwide. We've got local programs, 7 in the state of West Virginia. We usually are, you'll find us in the VA hospitals, transition units, any veteran affair program. But what we basically do is help active military service personnel and veterans who are in need of what we call their healing journey. And we do that through a dedicated and developed curriculum of fly fishing, which includes fly casting, fly tying. We use fly rod building, and this is our vehicle where we are able to provide the therapy, both physical and emotional, for these veterans.
So you said that there are 7 outreaches in West Virginia.
Yes, sir.
I know for a fact there's one in Beckley, which I believe is where you're at. And And then there's
Beckley's where I started. Okay. We have a program in we have one in Lewisburg, we have one in Huntington, Parkersburg, Clarksburg, Wheeling, and we used to have one in Martinsburg. It didn't make it through the COVID, and our program in Charleston, we had to shut it down during COVID. But we pretty much cover the state.
So if there are folks who are interested in the program, first of all, what's going to make them qualify to participate? Obviously, they need to be active service or veterans. Was there anything else as far as, you know, what's going to make them put them in the qualification? Okay. So,
no, sir. That's all they do. And what we don't actually necessarily look for or ask them to show us any identification, but we pretty much know when we are associated with a veteran that he qualifies.
And where are they going to go, you know, locally? Are they going to go to the VA and they can reach you guys through the VA? Or how do they get a hold of you all?
Well, if they're already attending a VA and they want to get a hold of us, we try to educate most of the providers at the hospital and the mental health coordinators, but they don't all know. And a recreational therapist at the VAs. But you can reach us on the website, too, at projecthealingwaters.org. We're an org, not a com.
So you said that you're working on the 20th year now nationwide. What kind of growth has the program seen over the years, and what have the results of the program been?
Well, the results are one of the hard things for us to quantify. But just last year alone, we served almost 7,000 veterans across the country. And we did that with somewhere around 6,400 volunteers. And the only way of really measuring I guess, is when a veteran comes up to us on a Monday or our next meeting and tells us that Project Healing Water saved my life. And they probably had an event over the weekend, which was hard, and they made the decision to maintain the program and being nice. But 22 veterans a day commit suicide, and that's what we try to focus on.
Absolutely. You guys have an amazing mission. You know, I'm a really big fan. You know, I'm a big supporter of our armed forces and our veterans. And you guys, I think, are doing some absolutely amazing work. Is there any cost associated for the veterans who are going to be participating, or is this something that's covered entirely through the program?
No, it's totally free to the veteran. We do all this with donations, corporate donations, local donations. It's all donor-based. The VA also has a big grant that they offer us, but no, it costs the veteran nothing, and we'll provide him with everything he needs to learn fly casting, fly fishing, the tools for tying flies, and rod building is one of our specialties we do during the winter, and we provide all that. And so when a veteran catches maybe his first trout or a rod he built on a fly he tied, and that's, you talk about success when you see their faces when they get that fish. We know we're doing the right thing.
Absolutely. So you talk about donation driven. If folks would like to donate, I imagine through the website there's going to be a way to do that. What's going to be the best ways to donate?
You can do that about any way you really want to. We can do it through crypto. You can do it through a check. You can do it monthly. I mean, you can go on the website, and it's already set up for you. Just click on whatever amount of donation you want to make, and it's a direct. You can do it by mail, crypto, I mean, PayPal. We have several ways, and it's all listed on the website.
Absolutely. And what if someone wants to do more than just donate? What if they want to volunteer? What if they really want to get involved? How would they go about getting info on that?
Well, about the same way. The volunteers are the heart of our program. That's where the rubber really meets the road. We're there for them every other week. It's an ongoing lifetime program. And like I said, our volunteers, when they connect with the veterans, it's just a symbiotic connection that is there forever for the veteran. We're not just there for a one-day fishing trip or an overnight outing. We're there for the rest of their days as long as they want to participate.
Okay. So you guys are really more, there's a lot of programs out there that, you know, they're there to help and they take veterans out on trips and stuff, but you guys are doing that and more. You're sticking with them, seeing them through the long haul, which is really fantastic.
And it works for the volunteers as well. To go back to your question, volunteers do not have to be military. And you can understand why, because we get outstanding fly fishermen, fly tires or whatever in the community, and they can volunteer. And that's how we use their skills, because just all of us volunteers doesn't necessarily have all those necessary skills. So, yeah, volunteers is how we do it. And you can do the same way. You go to the website, and there's a place there for volunteers. And there's no real requirement for volunteers either. But you'll find it becomes home.
Absolutely. And the volunteers, you know, there's some truly awesome people. I've actually met some. In fact, the people who turned me on to getting a hold of you with the Greenbrier River Fly Fishing Classic, they work, you know, very closely with you guys and have vets down for the classic every year. And so being a volunteer with the program really is a great thing, but it's something that really helps with the mission, because like you said, they're the heart and soul of the program.
That's absolutely the truth. Now this weekend, as an example, I'll be leaving tomorrow. We'll be at Thornwood, which is up in Pocahontas County, and we'll probably have 150 vets there this weekend. That's sponsored by Trout Unlimited, and they're providing all the meals and guides to take our veterans out onto the, there's just all kinds of trout streams up in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so the veterans look so forward to this weekend. Whether it's rainy or whether it's beautiful, we have classes. We teach knot tying, casting, everything. It's an educational opportunity as well to go fishing this weekend.
Awesome. Well, we're just about out of time, but real quick, I want to ask, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you'd like to cover before we wrap up?
We're just open to everybody, and if you've never even fished, let alone fly fish, we are a place where you can come. You'll find brothers who've been walking down the same road, who have the same invisible injuries, as we call them, and the camaraderie. If you're sitting at home in the dark by yourself, this is the place for you.
Absolutely. An amazing mission, and you guys do an amazing job. Mike, thanks for taking the time to talk today, and hopefully we'll get the chance to talk in the future. You guys have anything going on, be sure to reach out.
All right. I enjoyed being here. Tight line.
And that is just about going to do it for the show today. A big thanks again to all the guests for taking the time to be a part of the show. And don't forget, we are podcasting. We're on all your favorite platforms now. YouTube is the big one. But, of course, we're also on Pandora, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to each of those to keep up with the latest episodes. You can also follow us on The Jock on Facebook to keep up with the show on there as well. Thanks for listening, and until next time, I'll catch you later.
Miss part of today's show? Listen again and catch past shows.